Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for the Doctors Roundtable, a forum for conversations with Atlanta's leading doctors and thought leaders about cutting-edge trends and topics in health, wellness, and lifestyle issues. Here's our host, Tanya Mack.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for joining us. I'm very excited about our guest today and our topic today because it affects so many people and people that we know and love. Our topic today is an update on inflammatory bowel diseases. We're going to be focusing primarily on three: irritable bowel syndrome, Crohn's disease, and ulcerative colitis. And I've got some of the top experts in Atlanta here with me today. I've got Dr. Mark Sonnenschein from Atlanta Gastroenterology Associates. And I also have Mary Ball, who is the Southeast Region Educator and Support Manager for the Ulcerative Colitis and Crohn's Foundation. And welcome to you both.
Well, thanks for having us.
Very good. Why don't we just first start off letting you introduce each other? Tell us a little bit about your practice and your background and how you kind of got in this field, Dr. Sonnenschein.
Great. Well, I'm originally from Atlanta, but have been with Atlanta Gastroenterology for the past few months, and it's just an amazing practice. We're all over the city, have over 30 offices and 75 physicians, so really have a broad reach and take care of all diseases that relate to gastroenterology. So reflux disease, hemorrhoids, screening for colon cancer, liver disease, and of course, irritable bowel and inflammatory bowel disease, which we'll talk on. And irritable bowel is one of the most common things that we take care of. Probably a quarter of our patients were managing irritable bowel, and a much lower percentage are inflammatory bowel disease, but clearly have an overlap that we want to distinguish and treat so that we can make people feel better because they can clearly have symptoms for a long time before being diagnosed, and there are great treatments for both. So,
On the inflammatory disease side, I've read it's very prevalent in North America in like 1.5 million, or I'm sure, Mary, you'll give us some statistics on the when we get to you, but it's very much more common than I think people think that we have people dealing with this issue. So,
absolutely. I mean, inflammatory bowel disease is very prevalent. Thank good it's not as prevalent as irritable bowel syndrome, because irritable bowel syndrome can cause lots of symptoms and patients can be chronically ill from it, but doesn't have the long-term side effects that inflammatory bowel disease can have. But it's definitely important for us to distinguish between the two because treatment is very different, and so are outcomes. So it's important for us to distinguish through different tests.
Very good. And I know you got your training some at UGA, so you're part local boy and...
I'm all local boy.
You're all local.
You're one of the rare birds here. Yes.
That's very good. So you earned your stripes and then came back home.
That's right. I was born in Atlanta and born at Northside Hospital, practice at Northside Hospital, and our practice is everywhere.
And tell us about your training.
So trained at Johns Hopkins for my medicine. So we went away for 3 years and were lucky enough to come back and did my GI training at Emory, and which is a great institution. But you know, we work very closely with all doctors throughout. So.
Very, very good. And I know you're active in the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation Camp Oasis for Children, too, as one of your pet projects, and something that you're very active in, near dear to your heart.
I am, and I know Mary will talk about it a little bit more, but and we'll talk about inflammatory bowel disease oftentimes strikes young children first is when they're diagnosed. And the camp is a great place for support for children, because inflammatory bowel disease is something that is lifelong, that has to be managed lifelong. And watching kids who are young going through the challenges of childhood and middle school ages really as an adult physician reminds me of why we do what we do and caring for people and loving people and realizing that they aren't just a disease, that they are a people. And watching, you know, watching these kids run around and play reminds me of why I do what I do, to get, you know, like kids who graduate to become adults.
And it just centers you back into your own specialty.
It does. It reminds you why we do it.
Very good. Well, Mary, why don't you introduce yourself to us a little bit and how you got into this field and a little bit about your job, because you really work a lot with the patients directly.
Sure, absolutely. My name is Mary Ball, and I'm the Regional Education and Support Manager for the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation. And my job is to make sure that Crohn's and colitis patients, whether they're children or adults and their families, have the appropriate education and support resources available to them, whether that's support groups or Camp Oasis for Children, which is kind of a week-long, very fun support group, or an education program, or providing information for our GI partners like Dr. Sun and Shine here.
Mm-hmm. Very good. And about how many consumers do you think you affect, or how many patients are you involved with on an annual basis?
In the U.S., there's, like you said, 1.4, 1.5 million people with Crohn's or colitis. And here in the state of Georgia, it's estimated that there's about 30,000 individuals that have these diseases. So we provide a lot of support, I would say, to about, about half of those
individuals. So you're pretty plugged in, yeah, yes, for the individuals affected. So mm-hmm. you must be getting intervention very early in their diagnosis and their treatment
phase. We try to.
We'll come back to how we engage. Let's start off with irritable bowel syndrome. How about that? Why don't you just kind of educate the listeners on what that is, who's affected, some symptoms of that, and how you diagnose that?
Sure. So irritable bowel is very common. So like we just talked about, with inflammatory bowel disease, you're talking about 1.5 million people in the United States, whereas irritable bowel, anywhere between 10 to 20% of people may have symptoms consistent with irritable bowel. So now you're talking, 20, 50 million people. So a lot more people are affected with irritable bowel than inflammatory bowel.
We just see that
bowel.
Looking on commercials on TV.
That's exactly right.
We don't see a lot on colitis. We see a ton on IBS.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so IBS is oftentimes bloating, crampy abdominal pain, either constipation or diarrhea. It just depends. Patients could struggle from both. A lot of times there's a lot of urgency with it. So you have crampy abdominal pain, have to rush to the bathroom after eating, have a bowel movement, and feel much better. So it is a diagnosis of exclusion as opposed to a diagnosis of inclusion. So we have to rule out that there aren't other bad things causing your symptoms, like inflammatory bowel disease. Typically, we don't see blood in your stool with an irritable bowel syndrome. Typically, you don't lose weight with irritable bowel syndrome, but yet can cause terrible symptoms, crampy pain that can be debilitating to some people. Mm-hmm. Some people, very mild, have it just occasionally. Some people on a daily basis and really is debilitating. So it can be hard. It can be a challenge for people. We believe that diet may be a big trigger for some people. So it's got to be individualized. And again, our job is to make sure that we don't miss other conditions. Like I said, irritable bowel is an exclusionary mm-hmm. diagnosis as opposed to something that we see on a blood work. Mm-hmm. And that oftentimes can be very challenging to patients because our society has become one of, I want to be able to
now.
See it. It's now. Mm-hmm. I want to see it on a blood test or a CT or a colonoscopy. And sometimes when we do those tests and they're negative, they say, but I'm still having symptoms. And then they say, it's not in my head. And I agree. It's not in their head. They do have symptoms, and they're real. But there are tricks that we can do with diet and different sort of probiotics and even some medications that help people. The other thing is realizing that it's not something bad. That oftentimes is the biggest thing for patients because they're having symptoms every day, and they're worried, do I have a cancer? Do I have ulcerative colitis, Crohn's disease, the inflammatory bowel diseases? And we're able to reassure them. And a lot of times that in and of itself makes their symptoms much, much better.
Mm-hmm. Now, is there a difference in incidence of men and women that you see for IBS?
Sure. So I think that – so the data is a little bit conflicted. They'd mm-hmm. say usually it's probably 2-1 in females and males. Mm-hmm. But I think a lot of patients have it, male and female. I would say my practice is half and half.
Okay.
The data is going to show more females than males, but it's 2-1 is pretty close.
Okay, so we talked about some things that would trigger or affect IBS. One of them, some diet. What about stress?
So absolutely, stress is can be one of the major things. And patients will come in saying, "Listen, I've had a bad day or a bad meeting, and boy, I had to run to the bathroom." Nerves are absolutely. Now, I don't know if I would necessarily treat their symptoms with antidepressants or mm-hmm. anti-anxiety medications, but clearly, having a bad day or a deadline coming up can trigger, mm-hmm. just like preparing for a speech makes people nervous. It can be the same way with mm-hmm. irritable bowel. Mm-hmm.
And so, Mary, from your point of view, with working with patients that have IBS on the supportive role, since it affects so many more than the Crohn's and the colitis, mm-hmm. what kind of services do you guys offer or what do you recommend?
Well, we primarily work with patients that have inflammatory bowel disease, which is Crohn's and colitis. So we don't
get involved with the
IBS. But we do have some education materials that includes information about IBS so that people do understand what the difference is between the two
diseases. Okay, so that's a good jumping off point to the next question I have is, well, it kind of sort of starts as that, but I'm sure at some point there's how do you distinguish between IBS and then moving on into the more complicated inflammatory diseases?
Absolutely. So first of all, just to clarify, IBS does not transform into IBD. You either have IBS or you have IBD. Mm-hmm. It's unfortunate that the labeling is so
similar.
But again, IBD patients, you know, a huge number of IBD patients, I would say probably 50% also have IBS. You can imagine if IBS is very common, if you have IBD, you also are at risk for IBS. And so it is our job to make sure that we differentiate symptoms. Are these IBS symptoms or are these IBD symptoms? And the way I try to do that is usually blood work. Patients a lot of times can tell you, this is my IBD acting up. I'm having more pain. I'm having more bleeding, as opposed to the IBS, where we may see it, but you know, usually patients. So listening to the patients is always
critical.
The most important thing. But clearly, blood work will indicate it. So IBD is an inflammatory condition, so we can see their inflammatory markers go up, whereas in IBS, their inflammatory markers should remain normal. Again, blood. Oftentimes, we can do colonoscopies to see if anything has changed in IBS. There should not be any changes in your colonoscopy. And then CT scans and MRIs and even pill capsules where patients swallow a pill and it takes pictures all the way down. So we have different diagnostic tests that we can use to see, is this IBS or is this IBD? And that's definitely a challenge because the last thing we want to do is escalate our therapy for patients who have IBD, inflammatory bowel disease, when really it's IBS symptoms causing them. So,
right,
it can be challenging.
Very good. So let's kind of distinguish even further between the two and talk specifically about Crohn's disease for a little bit.
Sure. So Crohn's disease is one of the inflammatory bowel diseases. Crohn's disease, funny because people always want to know who's Crohn's. So
who is Crohn's?
Right. So
I want to know that.
Right. So Burl Crohn is who it's named after. He wrote an article back in the 30s about what's labeled terminal ileitis, which is the inflammation of the ileum, which is the last part of your small bowel. And Burl Crohn was lucky enough for his last name to start with C, because there were two other physicians on the same paper, and they didn't get the condition named after them. So so Crohn's disease is named after Burl Crohn, and he described it. Crohn's disease, again, is an inflammatory bowel disease. It causes inflammation anywhere from your mouth to your anus, which is very different than ulcerative colitis, which is the other inflammatory bowel disease. And Crohn's disease, as part of an inflammatory bowel disease, can cause a lot of abdominal pain, can cause a lot of diarrhea, specifically bloody diarrhea, will cause weight loss, and will also cause non-GI conditions like fatigue, low-grade fevers, will even cause joint pains and rashes too, and eye problems. So there are many conditions that can go along with Crohn's disease. But again, it can be anywhere from the mouth to the anus, bleeding, abdominal pain, diarrhea. So those are the constellation of symptoms, and weight loss being one of the scarier ones. So Crohn's disease can also cause what we call fistulas, where you get connections between different organs. Crohn's disease can also cause stenosis, which is narrowing of the bowel. And these are things that cause complications for patients and affect their quality of life. The stenosis or narrowing causes pain. You can imagine if food doesn't move through your GI tract, it's going to cause discomfort.
So it's a chronic disease that they tend to be sometimes well controlled and sometimes maybe not so well controlled, or flare-ups.
Absolutely. So IBD is both IBS and IBD, you can have flare-ups. IBD, much more worrisome. And our job is to get a patient's inflammation into remission, meaning we want to use medications so that we can stop their inflammation and get them into remission and then keep them on medications to remain in remission. So that is our whole goal with inflammatory bowel disease, is to control the disease by medications to put them in remission.
Mm-hmm. And about how long are those cycles apart? Just on an average, can patients actually go years and be okay? Or is it several episodes in a year? I know that it widely varies, but just on an average, what can people expect?
Sure. So some people have very mild disease, mm-hmm. and you can get them into remission really easily, and they stay in remission on their medications. Some people, it's very difficult to get into remission and need surgery. A large percentage of patients through their lifetime who have Crohn's disease will end up having surgery. And it's important that, you know, again, we use different medications. It's also important for patients to help us. And what I mean by that is cigarette smoking is the number one cause of worsening Crohn's disease. And despite all of our good medications, tobacco makes things very challenging for us. And so I am adamant that my patients stop smoking. Beyond the reasons to stop smoking, from coronary artery disease and heart and lung disease, but for Crohn's disease, it's almost impossible to control someone's disease if they're smoking. Very different than ulcerative colitis, and we'll talk about that in a little, I'm sure.
Is that from vasoconstriction? Why is it specifically vasoconstriction?
I don't think we really know exactly what it is. But patients who have surgery and we think that we've gotten all their disease out and they continue to smoke, it comes roaring back despite us putting them on medication. Mm-hmm. And so tobacco is one of the triggers of Crohn's disease and definitely makes it more difficult for us to treat them. Now, they're great medicines to treat Crohn's disease, and there's a lot of research that Crohn's and Colitis Foundation supports and research going on across academic centers for future novel therapies. And I think the transition over the years from treatment has changed drastically, I think has improved patients' quality of life drastically with inflammatory bowel disease.
So what has improved? Like what was old and then now what's standard?
Well, so some of the old medicines are still standard.
Okay.
So I don't want to discount the old medicines because they still have their role and they're very important. I think the algorithm of how aggressive we are has changed. We know that if we can get patients' disease in remission where we cannot find the disease, patients do better. And so there is a debate in the literature. Do you do what we call top-down therapy, meaning we go with very strong medications, or do you go from bottom-up therapy and use sort of, you know, not as strong medication? And each approach has benefits and risks. Top-down approach, meaning really strong medications, you are at risk of causing immune suppression, and it has its side effects. So it really, we have to tailor it to the patient's needs. And really, that's where the relationship with your physician is very helpful. Frankly, that's where Crohn's and Colitis Foundation comes in as well, because education for patients who have Crohn's and colitis, this is a long-term, chronic, lifelong condition. And so the more patients know about it and understand about it, the easier our job is, because they're educated, and clearly education is power. And so I'm a big believer in getting patients to read about the different medications that we can offer because it makes my job easier and patients like it. They're empowered.
Right.
So
let's say, Mary, I'm recently diagnosed with Crohn's disease. What are some of the key points that you're going to talk to me about? What is available? How would I engage with your foundation, and what can I kind of expect, and how would you get me going?
Sure, absolutely. Well, one of the first things I would do if you were newly diagnosed is refer you to a support group in your area, because peer-to-peer communication is so important. And just the nature of Crohn's and colitis, they're such complicated diseases, and everyone has such different experiences, that being involved with a support group community can help people handle the diagnosis and learn practical ways to manage their disease day to day. And then the second part of what people can expect is information from myself or the organization about the risks and benefits of the different medications, different ways to utilize nutrition and diet therapy to manage their disease, and just making sure that people really truly understand what the disease is.
Oh, okay. Very good. All right. So patients get treated, they get diagnosed, they come in. We've talked a little bit about medication management, but let's also talk about beyond that, what might they expect? Could they go to the next level of interventions? Would they require infusion therapies? Would they require surgeries? What would be the next step if it got more critical?
Sure. So more severe disease, as you would realize, requires stronger medication. And so infusion medications like Remicade, which is a TNF inhibitor or a biologic medication, are fabulous. Remicade and the other medications are fabulous biologics. Remicade is an infusion medicine, and patients have great responses to Remicade. And what it does is it blocks off the inflammation, the signaling cascade that causes inflammation. And so, there are infusion centers all over the city, and our job is to get, those patients who have severe disease, to get them on strong medications like Remicade that are infusion medicines. Now, infusion sounds scary. They really only last about, 2 to 4 hours, and patients feel remarkably better. My brother has Crohn's disease, and he was on Remicade and did great, and
so
still is doing great.
So how often might they have to go?
So Remicade is every 8 weeks, okay. And so I think when you do the math, it ends up being 3 total days a week out of an entire year. Take 4 hours a day times the whole year, you're talking 3 days a week. Four, potentially remission of your disease, where you are asymptomatic, not having abdominal pain, gaining weight, not having bloody diarrhea, feeling great. So definitely worth the investment of your 3 days a week.
And do they have side effects? Like, I know a lot of people here in infusion centers, they think chemotherapy, cancer, and I'm going to feel crappy afterwards. So.
Sure. So, no, most people do really well with the infusion. Of course, there's a risk of side effects. And when I have this discussion with patients, one of the things I always remind them is, an infusion medicine that may make you feel better as compared to, you already have a side effect. You have a condition that's causing you to feel bad. And so if this is going to make you feel better, we need to consider it, educate you on it, and see if this is the right choice for you. It's not right for everybody, but for a lot of people it is. And if it's going to make them feel better, absolutely what the right thing to do. Interestingly, young kids do great on it. Older adults do great on it. It just depends. And you really got to consider all the different medical conditions
and
that one has.
And the infusion centers, are they in your office? Are they at the hospital? Or are they various places?
Various places in our offices. And it's just a chair, an IV pole, and a TV to be able to watch. You bring a book. You bring
Sounds
your iPad. You work.
Sounds maybe scarier than it is.
Yeah, it really is not scary.
Okay, very good. Okay, so for patients that we try oral medicine, then we might try IV medicine. And for some patients, would surgery be another option for treating their disease?
So surgery is absolutely an option. For Crohn's disease, when you do surgery, you take out the affected area. Mm-hmm. Surgery is not curative for Crohn's disease. As opposed to ulcerative colitis, surgery is curative. You do not need any further treatment with ulcerative colitis after surgery. Whereas Crohn's disease, our job is still to maintain your disease and keep you in remission. So there may be an area of inflammation that we cannot control with medications or infusions that do require surgery. And then after surgery, we typically need to get you on medications to ensure that you remain in remission. Most patients who do require surgery end up going on an infusion medicine because they've gotten to the point where they've had such severe disease that they needed surgery, and thus we put you on an infusion medicine because we know you have severe disease, and those right now are the best medicines that we have.
And then what percent of would half patients end up with surgery, or is that pretty rare?
No, a lot of patients.
Over the course of their life.
Right. So a lot of the patients who have Crohn's disease over their lifetime end up with some type of surgery. I would say it's more frequent that you do have surgery than you don't with Crohn's disease. Now, I think that data is changing because of these medications. These medications are clearly preventing us from having to go to surgery, whereas before these medications, the biologics like Remicade, the infusion, that has shifted. And so more of my older patients who have had surgery before these medications came out, whereas compared to my younger patients, they have not needed surgery because of the medications.
Very good. And let's move on to ulcerative colitis. And we'll be two-thirds of the way through trying to get through the big three inflammation diseases here.
Sure.
So how is it the same and how is it different? I know the part of the gut that's affected is one difference.
Right. So ulcerative Crohn's disease, like I said, is mouth to anus and anywhere in between, esophagus, stomach, small intestines, colon. Ulcerative colitis, just colon, so just your large intestine. Very similar symptoms in the sense that you can have crampy abdominal pain, you can have bloody diarrhea, weight loss. All this is due to the inflammation, and you just feel run down from it. what's different from ulcerative colitis is, again, it's just the colon. So if surgically, if we're unable to control it with medicine, you're able to take out the colon and we're able to create a lifestyle for you with your colon out. There are different surgical maneuvers now that you can do well and feel great. A lot of patients who have severe disease with ulcerative colitis are very hesitant to have their colon removed for good reason, especially since a lot of the patients who have aggressive disease are younger. You know, they're in their 20s or 30s, which is a very troubling time. They're dating, they're getting married, and so there are challenges in that. But all the patients that I've ever sent for surgery who've had their colon out always say, geez, I feel so much better. But my goal is to make sure, is to do my best to prevent you from getting there. So infusion medicines like Remicade and different other and other medications we use to try to prevent that case. But if I can't control it, I then am almost forced to send someone to surgery because they will feel so much better afterwards. Mm-hmm.
Mary, did you want to weigh in on this?
Yes, I did. One of the things that the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation provides is individual support. So we have a lot of individuals that have had the surgeries that Dr. Sonnenschein's talking about. And if he has patients or if other doctors have patients that are considering these surgeries, they can contact the CCFA and we can put them in contact with those patients who've experienced
it
already.
Like a peer-to-peer connection.
Yes, and it's very, very
helpful.
Relating
to somebody who's gone through it.
Yes, right. Especially if someone has ulcerative colitis and they're considering having a total colectomy. So just wanted to put that out there.
Because I think you feel alone. You feel like when it's you, you're the only one.
Yes.
When really you connect with somebody else, then it's a lot less scary if somebody can tell you how to maneuver probably.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Okay, what about, is there a role immunotherapy with treating these diseases? Is that Remicade or is that a whole different?
So there are different medications that we use.
Different
classes of medications. The goal for all of them is to control inflammation. And so Remicade and that class of medications, biologic, blocks the sort of signaling cascades. There are other immune modulator medications that we use, azathioprine being one, 6-MP, methotrexate. Again, those also have different side effects. And so it really just depends, you know, those medicines we have to weigh from how active is your disease, which medications you've been on in the past, which side effects you've had. So all of the medicines for inflammatory bowel disease work on inflammation, and most of them are immune suppressants in some way. And so it's very important that people get their flu shots and get their pneumonia vaccines and wash their hands and watch what they eat. So, I mean, all those things are very important, but they all are immune suppressants pretty much. There are some topical medications that we use, and what I mean by topical is one of the classes of medicines called a 5-ASA. Are medicines that just act topically on the colon. And so those are pills that you swallow, and they're not absorbed a lot, and they can just act topically on the cells in the colon. And because they work topically, we also use a lot of suppositories and enemas that work topically as well. Now, patients don't like them, but those often help with symptom relief real quickly.
Do you see that more with ulcerative colitis since it's mostly the colon affected?
Absolutely. Okay. You got it right on.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Well, we haven't talked a lot about diet, but I'm sure that is a key piece of living with these diseases. So are there some general do's and don'ts?
So there is no great data for inflammatory bowel disease and diet.
Okay.
There have been studies done on patients who essentially have gone to an elemental diet, which is a canned diet, and that sometimes helps. But there's no great diet for inflammatory bowel disease. Now, with that said, there are clearly foods that aggravate that aggravate patients. And I think that's probably a lot of the inflammatory bowel disease, the irritable bowel that goes along with inflammatory bowel disease. And so if there are foods that clearly make one worse, then avoid them. I mean, that's, to me, very simple.
Are there some general classifications, or does each patient have to find their own?
I think each patient has to find their own. I also think that nutritionists are very helpful in helping physicians and patients because, you know, they have some different tricks. Clearly, patients who have inflammatory bowel disease, we have to worry about nutrition because we want to make sure they are getting all the, you know, minerals and vitamins and calories that they need. And so nutritionists can help us there. Nutritionists are also very helpful with irritable bowel syndrome. And there is new emerging information about irritable bowel and which foods may trigger irritable bowel more. And so I have been working. I work with a nutritionist in our office, and our whole practice does, on foods that can help, that patients can avoid, to decrease the trigger from irritable bowel perspective. I have a lot of patients who come in saying that they're going gluten-free. Mm. And gluten-free is the new rage.
It is the new rage. Celiac, gluten-free, and any TV station these days, seems like.
Exactly. And I think, many people feel better on a gluten-free diet. Mm-hmm. And that's because they're avoiding the carbs that bloat people. And that is what oftentimes happens with irritable bowel. And so I think that gluten-free is a reasonable step. I also think that working with a nutritionist to figure out which foods, there's something called now the FODMAP diet, FODMAP, and there are certain foods that cause bacteria in our gut to sort of expel more gas, and you get bloated and have abdominal discomfort. And so our nutritionists are able to help figure out which foods may bloat you or cause irritable bowel in your inflammatory bowel disease. And so those foods, clearly, you should avoid. Oftentimes, dairy products bother people. So, nutritionists are very helpful. Keeping a log is also very helpful, because then you know what food is bothering me more. We also know reflux is very common. And so there's certain foods like spicy foods and sauces that cause reflux. And to struggle with inflammatory bowel disease and then to throw on reflux, which is so common, can
make
be very
yourself miserable.
Exactly.
Mary, did you want to weigh in on the?
Yes, yes. Dr. Sun and Shine mentioned it's important to keep a nutrition log or a food log or something, and the CCFA has recently released a new online app, and it's called the GI Buddy. So patients can track their symptoms, they can track what they eat, and they can track what medications and what times they take it, and at the end of the day or end of the week or whenever, they can run a report to look and see when their symptoms spike as compared to what they eat or when they take their medication or when they don't take their medication. So it's a really great app, and it's on your phone, it's on your iPad, and it's free. So it's something that's really great, and it's also good for doctors because a patient can take it in and show it to them, and it was just released about 3 or 4 weeks ago, so it's but it's very, very helpful.
Thanks,
I think,
for that information. Mm-hmm.
And that sort of speaks a little bit to adherence of medication. If you're going to keep a diary, you're probably going to be more likely to be adherent to your medication, and that clearly has been shown by studies that the more adherent patients are, the better they will do. And so the app, whatever, the more we can get patients engaged, the better they're going to feel. The better care we're going to be able to deliver, because they're going to make it easy for us, because it's going to allow us to concentrate on things, because they're very active in their healthcare.
While we're on this conversation, before we had gone live on the air, we were actually talking about how some patients are misdiagnosed or go down the wrong road when they start to lose weight. They have these symptoms, and Mary, you and I were talking about sometimes it might look like even anorexia, where they drop a lot of weight and they have a lot of problems. Do you want to address that a little bit, or just make sure they get with the right specialist and get checked out, I guess, is the message there.
Sure, absolutely. You know, that's something that's very common, particularly among school age and teenage. Absolutely. I work with a lot of children at Camp Oasis for kids with Crohn's and colitis, and a lot of the girls in particular, when they are going through the diagnosis stage, they lose so much weight, and their peers and their families think that they may have an eating disorder, like bulimia or anorexia, because they are vomiting a lot. They are, they do have a lot of diarrhea, so they could be, their parents might
not
think
absorbing.
They're taking laxatives or something like that. So it's something that that psychologically and socially it's hard for especially kids to manage.
So while we're here on Camp Oasis, tell us a little bit more. Sounds like a great experience for kids living with these chronic diseases.
It is absolutely fantastic, because a lot of these kids, I think, feel very isolated in their disease. And it is embarrassing to talk about, because it's bathroom symptoms.
Exactly.
So it's hard to talk about, and it's hard enough to be a kid in the first place, not to mention one that has a digestive disease. So the CCFA has 12 week-long summer camps, and one of them is here in Georgia. We partner with Camp Twin Lakes, and we go for an entire week, and we have 120 children with Crohn's or colitis, ages 7 to 17, and they come and they get to be around people who understand what it's like to, have constant abdominal pain or, you know, have had surgery or on different medications. And it's not something we necessarily focus on all day, every day, but they get to do stuff, quote unquote, normal kids do. They get to go swimming, and it doesn't matter if they have scars on their abdomen. As a matter of fact, I think, and Dr. Sunshine can second this, they kind of have a scar contest to see.
Kind of like a battle.
Yes.
Battle.
Yeah.
Trophy.
Who has the best scars on their abdomen from surgery? So they really, they leave. I've had moms told me that their children have left home a victim of Crohn's and colitis, and they came home
being able to
a conqueror. Yes, absolutely. And it has, I have literally seen it change children just in that 1 week, and they're so empowered. And we have physicians that volunteer. We have nurses that volunteer. All of our counselors volunteer. And I'd say about 80% of our volunteers overall have Crohn's or colitis themselves. So it's just an environment that, you know, they stay in contact with each other all year long. And, you know, it's been around now for 15 years.
And is that sponsored through donations or through?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So the CCFA raises money through different events like our Take Steps Walk and our Team Challenge Half Marathon to raise the money to pay for camp. We do ask the parents or the families for a $250 fee. It costs about $1,500 a person. But if they can't pay the $250, then that's what part of our fundraising goes towards, is to make sure they have scholarships. And I would never turn a child away from camp just because they could not pay the $250.
Very good. Thank you so much for that. Well, I think we've gone over irritable bowel and Crohn's and colitis in pretty much detail. But I'd like to end the show just talking with both of you about what's on the horizon. What are you encouraged about that's new, either medications or surgery or something that shows promise? What's showing promise in this area?
So I hope I haven't left you with the message that there isn't a lot of promise and that patients don't get better, because most do. Most of our medications work well. There is novel therapy. There is lots of research going on for patients who do not do well with this. There's a lot of genetics going, genetic studies going on. And so there is a lot that is bright on the horizon for inflammatory bowel disease. And for irritable bowel, there are diets, there are probiotics, there are new medications every day coming on the market for irritable bowel syndrome as well. And I think the other thing is doctors are becoming more willing than maybe they have in the past to communicate, and I think that that is important in taking care of these patients, because, you know, the relationships that doctors and patients have are able to are able to flourish in taking care of them. And so I'm encouraged by taking care of patients with irritable bowel and inflammatory bowel, and most do to get better.
Mm-hmm. Which so is if great. You have to have a chronic disease, at least it's a lot of options to be well managed and live a good, long, healthy
life. And a lot of support systems out there to help patients.
Very good. So to connect with you, you are at Atlanta Gastroenterology Associates. Your phone, 404-252-9307. Your website, www.atlantagastro.com. Is that the best way to reach you?
That's the best way, because that really reaches out to the entire city, because it shows all 30-plus of our locations, all 70-plus of our physicians. And so our website will give you all of our bios. It'll give you all of our locations. Has an education site to it, so you can learn about hepatitis or reflux, inflammatory bowel disease, irritable bowel. So our website is a wealth of knowledge to find people.
Okay, and Mary, why don't we learn how to connect with you and your foundation?
Sure, absolutely. You can visit our website at ccfa.org, and you can plug in your zip code, and it will come up with your local chapter and the contact information. And on our website, we also have all of our education materials and just all of the resources that someone might need. And if someone in the Atlanta area or the state of Georgia is interested in contacting me in particular, you can call our office at 404-982-0616.
Thank you so much. Well, I think we're done for today. Thank you both for joining us. It's been a very interesting show, and I think a lot of misconceptions around inflammatory and irritable bowel diseases. So I appreciate you setting us straight. I'd also like to give a shout out to our sponsor, HealthGate. You can visit www.healthgate.com to find great physicians and resources like Dr. Sonnenschein, and for cost savings and for medical content. So thank you so much. Join up with us next week, and thanks for listening.
The Doctor's Roundtable has been a production brought to you by HealthGate and Business Radio X. HealthGate is a groundbreaking website where board-certified doctors and specialists offer savings on out-of-pocket healthcare costs. For more information about HealthGate, please visit www.healthgate.com or call 404-692-5377. We hope you tune in next week, and thank you for listening.